We're at 19 minutes into the hour of 7 o'clock, 7:19. We've been telling you we have some special guests in talking about the local educational programs that we have going on and what's going to be happening and getting ready for going back to school, because that's going to be here just in a little over 3 weeks on August the 19th, I believe, is the first day for students back at school. And we have in the studios with us today Ms. Jane Davis and Dr. Ann Dykes. And ladies, thank you so very much for coming in and being with us. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you, Jerry. We're glad to be here this morning.
And with you, Ms. Davis, we're going to be talking about some of the federal programs that we have. Well, both of them, well, we're going to be talking about federal programs. But tell us about the Title I updates. What does that mean?
All right. In Title I, we're very fortunate that all of our schools qualify for what we call school-wide programs in Title I. This means that the students at these schools, all of them are eligible for services through Title I. Our county, through the years, recent years, have received over $1 million each year from Title I. And we take this money and we have a formula we use, and it's based on the number of students at each school. They get a portion of this money to use in their schools to improve programs, to do reform strategies at each of the schools.
Now, under Title I, which students are eligible for those Title I services? How do we break that out under this student or this student? What's the criteria for the Title I? Let's just tell them what that covers.
All right. Originally, with Title I, students had to be eligible. They had to meet certain criteria. The focus was on low-achieving students, low-income students. But with a school-wide program, every student in the school is eligible for the programs. And that means that the money does not have to be focused on just a small group of students, but it can be focused on any of the reform needs that are needed there at the school.
So if a student's having problems and they need to be in after school, or is that the type of programs that we're talking about?
No, Title I can be in school during the school day, and they can receive help from in different ways, either through additional teachers helping them, what we call our Title I teachers, mm-hmm. and or just through computer programs, using technology to improve the students' academic abilities.
That's wonderful. That way, those students can learn as well, go right along with their class, and move right through the school system with their class without getting behind. Am I correct?
That's correct. And the old targeted assisted is what we call that old program. Mm-hmm. Students were pulled out at different times during the day. But we've gotten away from that pulling out. We the majority of the times, we're helping them within the classroom, so they're not missing any of the instruction they need to have.
That's great. What else does the title, now you said that's $1 million or more than $1 million, and I know that enhances the local budget and that provides those services. Now, we also have a new pre-K program at Spring Garden. Is that under federal dollars as well?
Yes, it comes from, well, the state gets money and then the state disperses it. It's through the Office of School Readiness. They have opened up grants this spring where new programs can come in. They've got an influx of extra money and we're able to do that. Mr. Mike Welch at Spring Garden was very interested in adding that program to his school. And he has worked very hard this spring to write the grant and to actually do a needs assessment first and then write the grant. And we were very fortunate that he did get a grant from the state. And that basic grant is through the Office of School Readiness. Now, they provide funds, but you can't support a pre-K program entirely from state funds. They don't send you enough money to do both a teacher and an aide and provide the other things that the students need to have in that pre-K program.
Pre-K is so important to get the school students ready at an early age to get them adapted, ready for school. And I know that we have a tremendous number of people that want their children in pre-K. This program is limited to a certain number of students.
Yes, Jerry, it is. We can only have 18 students in this program. The program does need to maintain 18 students, so we always have a waiting list. The process that we use, and this is set by the state, we have an enrollment period, and parents can enroll their child. And then from that enrollment, we take each child's name, and we draw. And the OSR has set it up to where we are to draw 9 boys and 9 girls to make the 18. And then if for some reason, and we have had this to happen on occasion, where there wouldn't be as many girls or as many boys that were signed up, there might be more of one than the other. But would they like to maintain an equal number of girls and boys? Then we have a waiting list, because sometimes through the year, for one reason or the other, the parent has to withdraw their child. Things are not working out or something happens, or they move.
Right.
And then we take from that waiting list, everybody is given a priority number, and we take the next one on the list and then the next one on the list to fill any slots that become open through the school year.
Well, we know how important it is here at the radio station, and we get a lot of calls when you start registering about pre-K. We start announcing it, and people will call, well, I didn't get the registration for pre-K. When is it? Where is it? You know, how do I get my child in that program and things like that? So we know from the phone calls that we receive here about the programs once we start announcing the registration and open dates and things. From that feedback, we can tell how important it is to our community.
Yes. We have, Cherokee County's had a pre-K for quite a few years, and we have done studies and looked at data. And we have data that shows that students that have that go to pre-K here, score better on tests. They are so much more ready for kindergarten when they go in there. And they don't have some of the problems that maybe some others who haven't had this service do when they start kindergarten. You know, they know the little things that kids need to know, such as, you know, how to get in a line, how to sit quietly, those things that normally you would have to teach them in kindergarten.
Or when you want to speak, you raise your hand.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, we still do that.
Okay.
And it's a structured program.
Sure.
The OSR has guidelines with the types of curriculum that you can use in there. They review the curriculum, and they select a variety of them that you can choose from. So, and I think as a state, we can be extremely proud of our pre-K program, because it's one of the top in the nations, and it's been that way for several years in a row. And so they work hard to make sure it's a good program, and we make sure it's a good program here in the county. We have 3 pre-Ks, one at Galesville, one at Center, and now one at Spring Garden. And any of those programs are excellent programs to be in. So
we get a lot of times now in years gone by, not now, but when pre-K first started, people say, aren't they starting our children way too early? You know, kindergarten is plenty early enough, but the data supports the need for this. Am I correct?
That's correct. The state has done and worked on collected data, and we have collected data here in the system with our own individual children, and it does support that. The pre-K program is designed for 4-year-olds. It's not, you know, for 5 or 6-year-olds.
Right.
It's specifically for that. Even in the playground, we have to have playground equipment that is specifically for 4-year-olds. It can't be the larger playground equipment that you would see normally in a school playground. We have to be careful about the size of the tables, the size of the chairs.
Sure.
It's amazing what all they look at when they come. And they review this program monthly. They have a technical assistant that comes and reviews what the teachers and the assistant teacher are doing in that program. They look at everything. They look at how they serve the meals, how they the children react on the playground, and then what kind of opportunities the students have to look at words and letters and other things that would pertain to curriculum. So it's a very structured program, and it's they have a variety of experiences. Another area that they'd like the children to participate in are field trips. They want them to go and experience other areas and, you know, things like visiting the zoo, going to the aquarium, other little trips like that that sometimes students don't have the opportunity to do.
And it keeps school interesting.
Oh, definitely.
It really does. Now, they get to expecting that, so they want to go on, once they start in pre-K, they want to go on field trips every year.
Oh, yes. They really enjoy it.
That's a good thing.
And they look forward to
school. Take a little break from the everyday mundane things sometimes, and it just keeps them interested. And at that age, the four-year-olds, they're like sponges. Am I correct?
Oh, that's correct. They're ready to learn, and they're interested. It's amazing what they can be taught to do at their our pre-Ks have taught the students Spanish words. They have taught them, really by the time they're through with pre-K, they do know their letters. They can make some simple words out of those letters. And they can all write their names, things that kindergarten teachers really appreciate when the child gets to them. So
absolutely. Another thing, we don't want to leave anything out on pre-K, but you also supervise and handle the Indian Education Program. Let's talk about that briefly and what that means to our county school system.
All right. Several years ago, when Linda Prater was here, she got us a grant with Indian Ed. Now, the Indian Ed grant is a little different. Most of our other grants we go through the state. The state allocates our money. They get it from the federal government, and they allocate it. With Indian Education, we do this straight with the Department of Education in Washington. So the grant I write for that comes straight from Washington. Our Indian Ed numbers have increased over the years because of really recruiting. We do that each year as the students register. We do it with a kindergarten registration. We do it with the help of counselors throughout the year as students come in and register. This grant is based on the number of Indian heritage students that we have. And right now we have around 600 students in the system that have registered with us. We get, just like all of our grants here, the amount of money has decreased, but we get approximately $100,000 for the system. And we use that for tutoring. It's after school tutoring. The tutoring has to be done by certified teachers. We can't use paraprofessionals or anyone else like that. We can't use students. We have to use certified personnel. We also provide some cultural events for our students, for our younger students, too, with this money. And this is a real help to educate them on the Indian heritage of this area.
So. The heritage you talked about, what type of lineage coming out do they have to have to qualify as far as the background? I know, I think my great-great-grandmother was half Cherokee Indian, so that puts me at an 8th or a 16th or something of that nature. Would that
yes.
qualify me if I were a student?
Yes, it would.
Okay.
Yes, it would.
I just wanted to check that out and see how far down the line there that you have to go. But if you go back and you have the Native American heritage in your bloodline, then you can qualify.
Yes, Jerry, yeah, that's correct. There's a form they have to fill out, and we have to keep track of the forms. And basically, it's the form. There is a, you know, for those that are interested, there is a opportunity for them to sign up and become a member of a tribe. But basically, they do that through the through another organization, not through us. We just have to have a form from them stating that they have Indian heritage.
Anything on these programs that we didn't discuss that you think that we need to, whether it be Title I, Pre-K, or the Indian Education Program, all of them vitally important to our system?
Well, something, you know, sometimes we don't realize, but our funding is being reduced each year, and sequestration is part of that.
Sure.
We have seen that reduction, and we hope that Congress will work on this and not will level this out a little bit. We know we have to reduce a little bit because of the condition our nation is in at this time. But that's probably one of our biggest concerns, is that that they do reduce it year after year. It would be great if we could have kind of steady funding for a change. But our schools work very hard to make sure this money is spent wisely and goes to benefit our students. And it does. We provide money for teachers, for through Title II, which is professional development. We actually provide two extra teachers in the system, and that's called class size reduction teachers. So that's a little extra that we get, and that's actually another pot of money. But like all of our pots of money, it's reducing every year. But we do that, and some other things, programs that I also manage beside Title I and Title II that I've mentioned, is the McKinney-Vento program. That's called Title X. That grant is a federal grant, but it comes through the state, and we're eligible for, we have to write a grant each year. That's something that has to be done. And we do have, we're required to have a McKinney-Vento liaison. This program provides instructional and non-instructional materials for students who qualify for this program. And we're very fortunate that we can provide things like school supplies. We can provide money for field trips where students might not be able to go on a field trip ordinarily. This program can help them to provide the money for that.
How do they sign up for it, or their parents sign them up for it?
This is a registration process. It is something that they have to sign up yearly. Sometimes our parents think that once they've signed up, they're eligible forever. But that's not the case. We have to do this every year. And we have approximately 400 students each year that become eligible for this. We will have a registration this year at my office there on at 420 East Main Street on August the 8th, 9th, and 12th. And we will be registering and signing up parents for this program from 8 to 5 each of those days.
Income requirements?
Income requirements is not the criteria. It has to do with their housing situation.
Okay.
So it's where they spend the night each night.
Okay.
So.
All right. So that's what qualifies
them. That's what qualifies them. And our McKinney-Vento liaison is Mrs. Amanda Monteith, and she came on board with us this past year and has done a great job. And she will be there helping with to sign parents up for that, children up for that.
Sounds like great programs that are, of course, all very important and necessary in our school system to give the quality education that our children deserve.
Right. The Title II, I will say this about Title II, it does provide some professional development for our teachers. Professional development is the researched way that teachers can improve and their instructional methods, and Title II does provide money for that, and we're thankful to have that. The other program that I manage, I know you're thinking, how many of these are there? But Title VI is another fund that we have. And Title VI is one of those programs where we can use this money for a variety of of places. It's we can use it for Title I type programs. We can use it for professional development. We can use it for safe and drug-free schools programs. And it's kind of a good kind of pot of money. Most of our federal programs are very limited on what you can spend the money on. It's not like we can just, you know, we've got this pot of money, let's build a building.
Right.
Because you can't build buildings with title money. You have to focus this entirely on the students. So we can't build buildings with Title VI either, but
right.
But we can use it for technology and a lot of different things that
you need.
That
you're going to have to give that educational background and provide the services for the students.
That's correct, Jerry.
Well, thank you so very much. It's all very interesting to learn about the different funding and the different programs that we have that fund the programs in school. And we appreciate you taking time to come in and share that information with us this morning. And again, those dates for registration on the McKinney-Vento at your office, August
8th, 9th, and 12th.
Okay, so parents, if you 8th, 9th, and 12th, that's on East Main Street.
East Main Street, yes.
All right.
Across from the fire department.
Just remember, it's right in front of the fire department, and go by and register your children for the McKinney-Vento program. We'll be back with Dr. Ann Dykes coming up in just a moment. We'll be talking about everyone's favorite subject when you go to school, lunches and breakfast and the meals, the CMP program, coming up next. Now we're back in our studios with Dr. Ann Dykes, and she is the CNP director. And Dr. Dykes, thank you for being with us this morning as well. And this has to deal with lunches and breakfast and a lot of other things. And tell us about it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jerry. Thank you for having us today.
It's our pleasure.
Yes. I'm sure that this is probably a year late. I probably should have come and had this interview last year. The Centers for Disease and Disease Control and Prevention has identified Alabama as one of the most obese states in the union. Now, the whole U.S. has an obesity problem.
That means we're getting fed too good or not being fed properly.
Or we're maybe not eating the right things and eating too much of what we are eating. So I know that Michelle Obama has gotten a lot of flack for all this, but she's kind of the face for the new nutrition guidelines that have been put out all across the U.S. It all started with the Institute of Medicine came up with new dietary guidelines back in 2010. They were published. And after that, President Obama signed into law the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act of 2010, which came up a lot of new guidelines. The USDA was forced to change the way school meals were served, or what the content of school meals.
We hear a lot of complaints on the news a lot of times that our federal government is getting too involved in our lives. Now they're telling us what to eat. Tell us why this is important.
Okay. You know, it's not actually the federal government, because the Institute of Medicine is the group. And, you know, they are doctors and dietitians, and they are the ones who've studied all the data and know what's good for us.
Right.
And it's not fried chicken and biscuits. And I know we hate to hear that.
when we were in school, if I remember, in our health classes, because we had health and science and things back there, they taught us about the food groups to eat, certain varieties, fruits and vegetables and grains and nuts and things of that nature.
Exactly.
And
those are the things that are being pushed these days.
But
just
they,
the things
we
just
were
said.
Taught that back in my day, which has been a few years ago.
Right.
So things haven't, it's come full circle.
Yes, yes.
But one thing that's lacking,
mm-hmm.
when I was growing up, and I don't know if you ladies will agree with this or not, activities are different.
Yes.
When I was growing up, we didn't work our hands on the video controls. We worked our hands out in the fields or around the farm growing up. That's not our lifestyle today
as much. And
that's
so important, too. I mean, hand in hand with eating a correct diet is getting that physical activity that
Absolutely.
We all need
and
to
that
stay
would help,
healthy.
That would help improve the children's lives and the obesity rate. Am I right?
That's correct. That's correct.
Now, let's talk about your food programs in school. You know, I have children in school,
mm-hmm.
and grandchildren.
Yes.
And so I hear about the lunches. Some of the children, it depends on who you ask. Well, I actually liked that pretty good today, or no, I didn't like it.
Right. Well, that's true. You know, all of us have favorite foods.
Right.
And I'm afraid when I watch some of the plates, we do have offer versus serve, which means we do offer five components for a lunch, and a student has to pick out three components. And one of the new guidelines is that this year, at least one half cup has to be a vegetable or a fruit. That has to be on your plate. So we are legislating that students eat fruits and vegetables. But the data shows us that those are the top foods that are the most nutrient rich and the best for us.
Can parents help you?
Oh, yes. We could just have lots of vegetables and fruits at home. But you know what? They're expensive.
Yeah.
They are very expensive. The produce aisle is one of the most expensive aisles.
So I'm afraid we don't. Is that what's limiting the parents teaching the children about fruits and vegetables at home is the cost?
I think that probably is a component. You'll see, you know, a lot of grocery carts with ramen noodles, you know, very high in sodium, but a good filling meal.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a lot of people in our county who are in poverty. We are 65%. This county is a 65% free and reduced rate.
Now, you have programs that assist those parents that are on a low income scale for those students.
That's correct.
Let's talk about that. How do they qualify?
Well, there has been published each year, guidelines are published as far as income goes. And we make those available to the public. I believe we've brought them out here to the radio station. They've been in the newspapers. They are on our website. If you look at the Cherokee County Schools homepage, if you have access to a computer, you will see the public release of the income eligibility guidelines for 2013-14. So a parent can go ahead and look at this and see if they might fit into the criteria. Now, every year at the beginning of school, every student is giving a lunch information packet. And that's not only for students who may need benefits, but it's for paid students as well, because it tells you, you know, how a good method of sending money to the lunchroom so that it's efficient and it gets there. We also have online. Parents can go online and put money in instantaneously.
For the student's food allowance,
right.
If I'm correct.
Exactly.
Now, let's talk about the cost for the students. Now, I see on here that you have breakfast. How do they qualify and get to school early enough for breakfast?
Well, our buses come in early enough that students can make a run by the lunchroom. I know that breakfast is being pushed a lot more as breakfast in the classroom. Those are some things that we've talked about. Offering it in the classroom are a grab-and-go breakfast that meets guidelines. But there is a little bit of time in the morning that students can go in and get a nutritious breakfast.
But no gravy and biscuit.
Did you look at our August menus?
Well, no, I just imagine if we can't have fried chicken and something like that for lunch, I knew you weren't going to have any gravy and biscuit for breakfast.
Well, actually, the new guidelines came out in for breakfast. That begins this year.
Right.
At the point that I had to turn in menus, we had not been trained on the new guidelines. So I did look at USDA examples of healthy breakfast menus, because we had to turn our menus in at the end of last year so that our food producers would have those items on hand when our school started back. So I have put them in the compliance module now, and what I have for breakfast planned for August works if I add a sausage the first week and take away the sausage the next week. I mean, there's a science to it.
I understand.
Yes.
And it's so important that our students understand at a young age and learn at a young age why we talk about healthy eating to reduce. We have a problem. I mean, it's a nationwide problem, not just Alabama, but all across our nation on obesity, which is tied to health care, which drives up the cost of health care. But the most important thing is it reduces the quality of life. Am I correct?
Oh, that's exactly right.
Because people that are obese with their weight, they don't have the opportunities to take part in as many activities as those that are not, and that are more physically fit.
And we just want to provide good food. I mean, we can go to sleep at night when we know that we have provided the right kind of food for our students to eat.
And I have to say this: proportions. I can eat that. Those are the type of foods that I enjoy, and that. So I can come to any of your schools any given day and eat lunch with your students. And I promise you, I can clean up my plate because I like the type of meals that you're serving. I know a lot of students don't, but it's because they haven't been taught to eat that at home a lot of times. And it's an educational process, and that's what school's about.
I'm just amazed when I go into the cafeteria and those ladies produce those meals so quickly and so efficiently, and it's just amazing to me still. I've been in this for 4 years, and I'm like in awe. But I would like to also put in a plug for our cafeteria ladies, and I will affectionately call Mr. Barry one of our ladies. We do have one gentleman as a manager at Sandrock. But each one of our cafeterias rated 100, a perfect 100 score on their last health department rating.
Wonderful.
Because they work hard to feed these children.
Sure they do. They take pride in what they do, and they want to make sure that the children are fed well, because if the children are get a good meal for breakfast and a good meal for lunch, then they are more inclined to learn more.
Exactly.
And it helps the environment. Now, if people want to know more about the qualifying for reduced or free meals for their children, they can go on your website.
That's correct. On the Cherokee County Schools, the district website, it's on the homepage, but you can also go to the Department of Child and Nutrition, and you can find it there as well. But you can also call the office. They can just look in the phone book and, you know, call our office, and we'll help them find the information.
We often hear about, and I hear in the farm news every day, about the new farm legislation, new farm program that's being pushed in Washington. Why is this important to you about the agricultural farm bill?
Well, now, are you talking about, you know, farm to school or commodities that we receive from the federal government?
The CNP program, is it provided partially under the farm bill?
Yes, we actually receive commodities that are, you know, the only way that we make money for our employees and for salaries and to buy food is by serving meals. That's how the money is made, and we don't want to be a drain on our district, because we want our school district to be able to fund the education programs that they need for the children. So but the federal government does provide a lot of what we call free food.
Right.
And it's good food.
Yes, it is.
And we're all excited about that.
All right. Let's talk quickly about the price for lunches. Have they gone up? Now, you mentioned a moment ago about fruits and vegetables. These are the items that you have to feed to the children to be in compliance.
That's
Under the programs. And in order to do that, do you have to pay more for the fruits and vegetables as well?
Actually, we do. You know, our pricing. One reason we went up last year to $2.25, we had been $2 before, is the federal government said that they wanted a paying student to pay as much as they pay for a meal. And for a free student, we have a reimbursement of $2.51. So there is a gradual process of bringing a paid student's meal price up to the price that a free meal is reimbursed to the district. So that's what we're in the process of doing right now. We did not go up again on lunch this year because we went up enough last year that we did not have to this year. We may have to go up next year. You know, there's a calculation will be published, and we'll have to follow those guidelines for that. We did go up for breakfast because we serve four items, and actually each one of those items cost about 25 cents, a carton of milk, you know, a juice. Those things cost us, you know, that much money. So we did go up to $1 from 75 cents for four items for breakfast.
All right. Is there anything else that we haven't covered? I know we've gone over a lot.
I just wanted to say one more thing. Our county has applied for and received the Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Program grant. All of our schools applied for it, but more schools were applying, and not every school was given the grant. But it is an opportunity for us to offer fresh fruits and vegetables as healthy snacks, free during snack time, to students in three of our schools.
That's wonderful.
Yes, we're excited about that.
Do they have to qualify to get them or just ask for them?
Oh, you have to be an elementary student. So our K through 12 schools are not too happy about that.
Right.
The high school students. But, you know, the school just has to meet certain guidelines to qualify.
Okay. And then so those students in those schools can have those fruits and vegetables.
That's correct.
All right.
We also have an after-school snack program as well in the schools that are having after-school programs. We're able to furnish a healthy afternoon snack for those students after school.
Okay, that sounds great. At least the students, once they become acclimated to eating properly, they'll enjoy all of the foods that you have.
Thank you.
Because and a lot of this is going to have to start at home. Am I correct?
That's correct. We just cannot serve any foods that are a minimal nutritional value. And that would be,
you know, like potato chips and French fries.
Yes.
And things like that.
Actually, we can have French fries.
Can you?
Yes.
All right.
We
well,
do
you can
have
bake
French
them
fries.
And things
that's
of that
correct.
Nature. Yes.
That's
yeah.
correct.
That's right. So just slice them up a little and fix them a little bit different, but they can have them and they can actually be very nutritious. Well, thank you so very much
thank
for coming
you
in
very
and being
much
with
for
us.
Having
I hope
us.
We didn't rush through that too quickly. We'll have to have both you ladies back in another day to talk more about these programs that are so vitally important to our school system.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's our pleasure to have Dr. Ann Dykes and Ms. Jane Davis to be with us today from the Cherokee County Board of Education.